From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 18th day of July, 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. The heavy lifting in the market has been done by the cash grain market, that at least until this week, and futures have faded pretty dramatically. We'll discuss that with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And along the way, we'll check in on the weather forecast, too. That's been the driver both ways. We'll do that with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, September corn down 11.5 cents at 424.5 in the afternoon. December at 429.75, 11.75 lower. The March corn down 10.5 cents at 438.25. July 445.75 down 9. And next year's December contract in the corn finished at 416.75, 2.75 lower. August soybeans at 881.25 down 1.25. November at 899, 1.5 lower. The January down 1.25 at 9.11.5, and next year's May at 9.30, down 1 cent. Bean oil futures 4 cents lower. The bean meal down 50 cents at 3.07. And the wheat futures for the soft red 12 cents lower. 4.93.5 in the September. That's the lead option. The hard red lead at 4.32.75, 9 cents lower. Live cattle futures, August contract 72.5 cents lower at $107.40. The August feeders down $1.15 at 139.42.5. And lean hogs for the day at $82.77.5, up 77.5 cents. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what's been a pretty rough week in Chicago. Hey, Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
You're more than welcome, Todd.
Tell me about this week and whether it was something you expected, whether the pullback was harder than you thought it might be.
The pullback is deeper than what I expected, because I think a week ago when I talked to you, I was the market was kind of breaking out of the current pattern and was kind of ripe to kind of finish off July on a high note and rally into a mid-August high. I guess that's what my cyclical work still implies, but I could be off a beat there or so. I think looking back at it, the market kind of topped here in mid-June, which is seasonally kind of correct. Between mid-June and mid-July, corn has half of their highs are made. And then, you know, the last half of July is usually down. And here we are in the last half of July. But we, you know, we had a good rally in May and June, and that kind of priced in some kind of wild numbers. You know, we talked about maybe 13 million acres of corn not getting planted. We talked about a national average yield maybe as low as 135, and all of this rigmarole. So we went through that stage of pricing in the worst of the worst. Then, of course, USDA kind of put the damper on everything with their June 30th acreage report, and then they just kind of, you know, reiterated that position with the July crop report. And there's really nothing that the market knows or is going to get any fresh information on until we get into the August crop report. So I think for the most part, we were sideways last fall through the winter. Then we had our rally here during the planting season into June, and now we've just been kind of tracking sideways. Now, what's scary is there are, you could probably visualize some head and shoulder top formations on both corn and soybeans, if that's what you think that this thing has topped and we're going to go lower from here. Or otherwise, you could probably argue that maybe we're back into another sideways range, but we're just at a higher level than what we were during the fall and winter months. And I guess I'm inclined to believe that because we need more information. The trade needs more information. What's actually planted? You know, what kind of yield prospects are actually out there? Is the growing season going to be good enough to let some of this late planted corn, late planted soybeans make something, or isn't it? And the only thing we need from that is time. And, you know, USDA's August crop report is going to start narrowing some of this uncertainty. Hopefully, they're going to resurvey. They're going to give us at least another look at planted acres and then what they think will be harvested acres on both corn and soybeans. Now, I think these revisions are going to continue for a long time. I really don't think we're going to know exactly what our production was until we get to the January final. But we're going to start narrowing that range, starting with the August crop report. And then again, we'll have the September crop report. And by September, we'll begin to start hearing some early yields. And probably the early yields will probably be pretty good. The question is about the late planted crop, is if what kind of yields are going to be on the later planted crop. So I think we're in a holding pattern, waiting for more information to kind of get a handle on actually what the size of this crop is. And the key thing, I think, is going to be when the combines really roll in the eastern Corn Belt and whether or not these yields, you know, come in better than expected or less than expected. It probably won't be too hard to be better than expected because everybody had their sights set pretty low here a month ago. But it's still going to be that. And that's the way it was in 93. Now, 93, everything was a little later. We had kind of more of a late June, July rally, and then we fell back into August, September. And then when the combines started rolling, then and we found out that rain didn't necessarily make grain, and the yields were lower, and then USDA started confirming those lower yields, and then they readjusted their acres, and then the market took off and rallied all the way into the January final. This year, since we're maybe a little earlier, since we kind of had a June rally rather than a July rally, so, you know, maybe this thing is going to waller around here during this last part of July, August, and then maybe the market will regroup, and then we'll maybe have a counter seasonal rally as we begin harvest. But there's still a lot of unknowns there, and that's kind of where the market's at. And due to a general lack of export demand, the market is hard to hold the market up against the perception that overall crop ratings are slowly improving. I was a little surprised that the trade was thinking that the crop rating levels would slip a little bit last week. And, you know, the 1% increase is probably in the margin of error, but it did increase. And that's kind of what I expected. And I expect we'll probably see some increases again on Monday. And the trade is pricing that stuff in. I don't know how much difference it makes. We still need to know acres, and we still need to have at least some kind of subjective yield estimate based upon plant population and that kind of stuff. And USDA will give us that in the August report.
What do we make of the soybeans and where they are technically?
Soybeans, pretty much same thing with as corn. If you look at both markets, you know, they had the spring rally. Then we've tracked sideways. They both have a head and shoulders top formation, possibly developing. Now, a lot of times that right shoulder gives you a couple false signals, but there is a head and shoulders top formation in beans too, just as there is in corn. So as a technician, I see that, and you know, it worries me some. The key will be whether or not today we had the corn down, beans kind of unchanged. That tells me we're unwinding the long corn short soybean spread. And then corn got a little more push because of weak export sales and the perception that the corn crop is getting a little better. Whereas beans, I think there's still an awful lot of small beans out there that people are still trying to get their arms around, of what kind of yield potential those beans are actually going to realize in the long run.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us here in the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can look us up, find us on demand, listen to us anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. You'll also find us in the Google Play Store, SoundCloud, Stitcher, on NPR One as well. This afternoon, we'll record Commodity Week and post it there by about 5 o'clock, that to Will Ag and all the other places, and you'll hear it tomorrow, of course, during the 2 o'clock hour on the Closing Market Report from the home station, many of these radio stations over the weekend. We'll talk a whole lot about that agmarket.net tour, air tour of the Midwest that took place in the beginning of this month. Matt Bennett will be here, along with Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodity. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Matt, of course, in Windsor, Illinois. Ellen Dearden will join us as well. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. Catch it online each and every Thursday evening around 5 o'clock and on the air Friday and over the weekends. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with China, but with trade that's actually taking place or could continue to take place. When it comes to the hog markets, Kearns and Associates economist Steve Meyer says China remains the dominant factor.
We know we got more hogs coming, but if the Chinese step in here and keep buying more product, which I think they have to do, then we're going to have our market supported through the fall. We think there's a pretty good chance that prices will stay pretty stable here and may actually strengthen in the fourth quarter. If they do that. Now, you know, that's a pretty big if, but, you know, because we've been disappointed so far, but the magnitude of the losses there are such that I just don't think they're going to be able to find enough pork elsewhere.
And Meyer says the U.S. remains the logical place for China to source its pork.
Obviously, pork from Europe, pork from Canada, pork from Brazil would be cheaper than ours because of the tariffs, but those countries aren't going to sell them all their pork. And so at some point, they're not going to be able to buy any more there, and they're going to have to come to us. And right now, of course, Canada can't ship there because of this snafu over some export certificates a couple weeks ago. So we still think we're still kind of bullish for hogs this fall and very bullish for hogs in 2020. You know, everything we gather, China's lost at least 30% of their hogs and maybe 50%. And this is the major protein in their diet, and I don't think they can get along without it.
If pork prices go too high, Chinese consumers could reduce their purchases. Those prices have edged up in recent weeks, but Meyer says Chinese consumers have not seen a significant change in buying habits. Well, let's stay with trade for the moment, but we'll go back to that WTO ruling that took place earlier in the week. The World Trade Organization ruled against the United States in a pre-trade war dispute with China, opening the door for more retaliatory tariffs. The ruling says some U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods do not comply with WTO rules. The case opened in 2012 when the United States implemented tariffs aimed at products the U.S. claimed were unfairly subsidized by Chinese state-owned companies. A U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer in a news release rejected the ruling. Lighthizer says the report undermines WTO rules. The report says that the United States, quote, must use distorted Chinese prices, unquote, to measure subsidies, according to Lighthizer, unless the U.S. provides more analysis than the hundreds of pages in provided investigations. Now, China's Ministry of Commerce, in a statement, welcomed the ruling, adding the U.S. has seriously damaged the fairness and impartial nature of the international trade environment. Meanwhile, Lighthizer says the U.S. is determined to take all necessary steps to ensure a level playing field. Trade talks between China and the U.S. could continue this week. And finally, we'll come right back here to Middle America, where Bayer plans to move its crop sciences headquarters to St. Louis and to close its Research Triangle Park facility. Bayer, which acquired St. Louis-based Monsanto for $63 billion, says it will move 500 jobs to the former Monsanto campus in Missouri. The announcement comes after Missouri Governor Mike Parson's first European trade mission. The trip included a stop in Germany to meet with the Bayer CEO. Bayer will close its crop science facility at Research Triangle Park in Raleigh, North Carolina. However, a company spokesperson told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch Bayer's environmental sciences operations will remain in Raleigh. Bayer will make $164 million in improvements to its St. Louis facility. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check now the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great being here, Todd.
Let's start with the heat that has been building into the Corn Belt. Tell me about it and what the prospects for the next 3 to 5 days might look like.
Well, the heat wave is going to come to an end on Saturday and Sunday. We'll have a pretty big cool front move through at that time, so that'll be something to monitor. The heat has not been all that impressive in the northern Corn Belt over the last 2 days, and that's primarily because of cloud cover from thunderstorms. We still have some of those taking place in northern areas of Illinois and Indiana today, and we'll see a few more generally along and north of Interstate 80 over the next couple of days. But after that, again, everybody starts to cool off, and these temperatures that will have been in the middle to upper 90s at times, with minimums only in the 70s to near 80, will drop by a full 10 to 15 degrees. So next week will be a lot different story, at least during the first half of it.
Yeah, so rainfall is something we were wishing would stop. And about now, I think producers are thinking, hey, you can turn that back on again. So what does it look like, and who needs a drink at this time?
Well, it's pretty much the Corn Belt. If you look off into the plains, those areas have been pretty wet. The Dakotas into western Minnesota and parts of Nebraska, they do not have any type of dryness issue to even think about. So they're doing great. As you move to the east, it has been a little dry in the Corn Belt, mainly to the east of the Missouri River. Now, there's a couple of caveats to keep in mind. Number one is that it did rain over the last 2 days in parts of Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, far northern Illinois, and far western Illinois, and even eastern Missouri. So it has rained, so this is not a totally clear-cut dryness situation. And we can use our proprietary data and weight everything out. And it's basically showing us that one-third of the U.S. corn and soybean crop was drier than normal over the last 14 days. But just to put that in perspective, we can go all the way back into 2011, so we have 8 years of data. And that would still be the third lowest level of dryness. So it's not too unusual to be in that level. And if you look at it over the last 30 days, only about 5 to 10% of each crop was drier than normal. And that's actually the lowest coverage of the entire period, at least for July 17th, going back 8 years. So it's not really all that dry. It's just dry at that topsoil level because we haven't had too much rain in the last 7 to 10 days in some of these areas.
What are your expectations when you look further into the end of the month of July?
Well, that's kind of where there are some minor concerns. We already talked about some of the storms we'll see to the north over the next couple of days. And along that cool front on Saturday and Sunday, we'll also see a few more storms. Most of those would probably end up to the west of the Mississippi River. Then we get into next week, and with that cool air mass comes a drier air mass. So we're not looking for much rain next week. Then we start to get out 7, 10, 14 days into the future, and we can see the temperatures are going to warm up a little bit. We don't think we're going to see another heat wave, at least not in the medium term, but it does look like it'll start to warm up. And with that warmer weather, then you would expect some thunderstorms here and there. But just in general, it doesn't look all that wet going forward. And if you look at into the past and you look at some of the wettest starts to the year, which this one certainly will rank among, and if you look at some of the wettest periods going all the way back to last summer, and this one will certainly rank among the wettest 12, 13, 14-month periods on record in the Corn Belt, most of the August ended up near or drier than normal. So there is some precedent, for whatever reason, for next month to be at least not wet, but maybe near or drier than normal. So this might not be totally unexpected, but it's still so early with this crop being planted so late. Even if it dries out a little bit over the next week, we did see some rain. You start to get some big rains in August, and it's really not a big deal. So we're just kind of in a waiting game once again.
So just waiting it out. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'll chat next week.
Indeed, we will. That is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's of agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Well, tough week, all 4 days, actually, Matt. What'd you make of it?
You know, the interesting thing this week is that, you know, essentially we're still looking at a very poorly rated crop from a national perspective. Got a lot of rainfall in certain areas, though. And so, you know, this time of year, typically, that is going to be have an adverse effect on prices. That's exactly what we're seeing. So the tough thing is for some of us, like myself, who didn't get a whole lot of rain, you're going into this extremely hot period and definitely going to take a toll on some of these crops. Now, we're supposed to get a little bit of a cool off next week, but the tough thing is that most of the maps, at least for the next couple, 3 weeks, don't look like we've got a whole lot of precipitation heading this way.
So is it just a matter that there wasn't anything to really feed the bull with this week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, essentially, I guess, you know, you've got to continue to give a steady dose. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, this could end up being like 93, you know, who knows, we might end up flailing around, and then you come back in and find out what's really going on in harvest. Found out that we had 7 to 8 million acres, you know, of prevent plant so far, but you've got to ask yourself, what was the original planting intentions? And so, you know, there's a lot of wild cards out there, but I think the one overriding thing for me is a lot of corn acres, no matter what the final number ends up at, we're put in the ground simply to try to beat the insurance state. And we have a lot of agronomic challenges out there this year, particularly in the eastern Corn Belt. So I think as this crop begins to tell its story, eventually you're going to be looking at, you know, a situation that you're probably not going to be seeing the kind of down days we're looking at today.
Now, your company tried to detail part of this, and we'll talk in depth about it during our Commodity Week discussion. You're going to join that this afternoon with a flyover that you used across Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. Don't recall whether you quite got further to the west or not, but that was looking at the crop and taking some counts, and it just, in your detailed look, appeared that the facts support that this crop was in trouble and has been since the very beginning. And corn tends to have a memory about what happened in its early life, as opposed to a crop like soybeans, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, essentially what we saw is just a lot of bare dirt, unfortunately. And then, of course, we saw a lot of denitrification issues, very poor stands, especially in the eastern Corn Belt. But I think one of the things that really jumped out at us is that we figured Iowa would be mostly pristine, and that's just not what we saw. And so since we've done the flyover, you know, I've talked to several of my friends who are agronomists in the state of Iowa, and they've said, you know, we've got a good crop going, but it sure isn't, you know, an all-time record by any stretch of the imagination. So there's a lot of things to garner from it, but by all means, a typical weather market that we've had the last few years has been with a really good stand that just couldn't flat out get the weather. You know, we couldn't get any rain, and so we rallied the market up to that, you know, whatever, 418 or 430 level, depending on the year. And then finally, you start to get the weather pattern to shift. And most producers will tell you they'd give anything to have a full stand because bottom line is precipitation is great if you have a lush green corn crop, but it doesn't do much for bare dirt.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you more during Commodity Week this afternoon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Don.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, agmarket.net. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Thanks for being along with us for the day. Don't forget, we'll be back tomorrow. You can listen to Commodity Week online tonight or here on our home radio station tomorrow. Many of these radio stations over the weekend. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.